Yeah, they got a nice art museum there in Indianapolis. I've been to that. Eli Lilly's got a big building there.
Yeah. They got a racetrack.
They got a got a racetrack.
I have to tell you what a major disappointment that. Words cannot express what a disappointment that is.
An epic failure?
It's almost like the Alamo. Okay.
Really? Is it worse or slightly better?
Well, of course.
I know it's got to be bigger.
It is, of course. It's larger, but I mean,
it's just a big old oval with a bunch of stands and a bunch of grass and a golf course in the middle, right?
And it's got a neighborhood around it.
Yeah.
I mean, and much like the Cotton Bowl. I mean, you know, they
not
got
the best neighborhood.
Yeah, they got it's a neighborhood who's just I wouldn't say it's quite as bad as that, but you know, it's just turned and a time or seven, and you know, those folks put up signs saying race day parking,
right?
$38.
Yeah,
but $79.
Yeah, I hear the traffic is pretty amazing on race day
because
are going through neighborhood streets.
That's
to get
it.
There, right?
And I got, and I, it wasn't on race day, and, you know, granted it was not a beautiful day or whatever, and I was there on like a Tuesday or something. But it was kind of like, is this all there is to this thing?
Did you knock on a door and ask someone that question?
Well, no, actually, I went to the museum.
Hey, so I'm looking for the racetrack. Is that all there is here? Because this town sucks.
Yeah, because again, and it did. But again, you're right, Tom. There are a lot of metal stands there as well, just bleacher type things. And
so it's not even aesthetically pleasing.
No, and again, this was a time I think before they broke up with CART, and it was the race. It was the Memorial Day event, and to go there and kind of go, huh?
Well, and to say that NASCAR has double lapped IndyCar racing is a motherlode understatement.
Because those were separate leagues completely. People never crossed the lines. Those people were stars. You know, Parnelli Jones and A.J. Foyt, those were the stars of this whole thing.
Oh, I can remember Indy Day. I mean, that was one of my favorite sports
days. Yeah, it was the end of school. We knew school was out.
Yeah, because I remember, you know, I'd watch it on TV, and it would last so long if I had to, you know, go out and get something. I'd find it on the radio. I mean, I enjoyed it on the radio because Chris Economaki was down there.
No, it was Chris Schenkel first. You didn't watch it on TV.
That's true.
For years, it was not on live. I remember they made a big deal about when they did a tape delay of it the same
day. Exactly. But you could listen to it live on the radio.
Yeah, you could.
Yeah.
America's greatest spectacle in racing.
Uh-huh.
All right, enough of the old guys talking about Randy Rouse. That's it. But, you know, I don't really want to talk politics very much either. Let me tell you how hard
it's Friday, so we only go to 8 o'clock.
Yeah,
then,
that's right.
Then we have company and senators.
That's right. We do. We have company. Yeah, y'all won't talk much. But I want to tell you how hard the United States Senate is working. You know how many votes they had this week?
How many?
One.
Oh,
and that was on Monday. And you know, as Tom Coburn says, this is hard work. We have to make tough votes. Okay. What are you supposed to be doing over there? Okay. Oh, you're supposed to have lobbyists take you to lunch. Oh, that lasts all day. Okay, fine. Yeah, one vote. One vote. So thanks for that. Now I'm just going to roll this one out here for you. Just see what you boys think about this. Gabby Giffords remains in the hospital, but her aides are feverishly discussing the possibility that she may recover in time to run for the U.S. Senate.
Wow.
Yeah, at least wow.
Okay, what?
My problem is I'm not exactly sure what her acuity is, you know, what her abilities are, and they are racing to try to see if they can put her on the next ballot. John Kyle is stepping down to run for senator.
This is distasteful.
It's distasteful. It is unseemly. And, of course, the Democrats are wary because they're going, well, if she's in, I'm out.
When they say
racing. Yeah, because you're going to run against her?
Right. Exactly.
You know, when they say racing, I'm sorry. If I'm shot through the head, through the brain, I don't want doctors racing to get my recovery done. I want them taking their time would be really nice.
And, of course, the New York Times says, well, they don't want to get ahead of themselves, that her health remains paramount, but they're already laying groundwork for a campaign should she decide to run. I mean, really? Really?
And then if that happens, I mean, who's going to run against the woman that survived a bullet in the head? You know?
But well, okay, but fine. I'll be the unpopular guy. I have no problem doing this.
Yeah.
What has she done other than that?
No, very true.
I mean, aside from her injuries, and this is not anything, I'm not trying to be ugly here, but really, how is she otherwise qualified to run for the Senate? Now, granted, that doesn't keep people from running for the Senate. I get that. But was she was not even a serious candidate, I don't think, before any of this happened.
No.
This is a purely emotional run. This is a purely emotional tactic, and it's just poor, poor form.
Well, again, it shows that politics is theater. It just shows that politics is
And they're
theater.
Completely in touch with reality.
Yeah. But anyway, that's
well,
the
it's,
story.
It's theater, but the troubling part, they're playing with real money,
mm-hmm.
and they're playing with people's livelihoods and lives and things like that, and there's nothing good that can come out of that.
We'll get you in there, and then all we got to do is once you're in, then you're in. And we'll teach you what you need to know once you get in. And that... If that's the case, is nothing but the Republican National Party doing that. And that's they're no better or worse than the other bunch. So there you go. There is a poll out that says there are three possible presidential contenders within striking distance of President Obama. They would be Mike Huckabee, tied with the president at 46%.
Low profiles will do a lot.
Yeah.
And I know you're about to say Romney. Huckabee and Romney have kept very low profiles.
They have. Well, and Romney understood. He misran the race last time.
Right.
This is a guy who has a tremendous amount of ability. He has talent in many business-related areas. Of course, we found out having a president who had a business background didn't necessarily make you a good one. Think about him, and I think about Herbert Hoover. Herbert Hoover is a really brilliant man, but, you know, once again... The economy kind of got him, and then, of course, there was that guy who owned the baseball team. So Mintz at 43% to 42%. Chris Christie trails the president by 6 points. Now, he has a little higher profile, obviously, but it is what he, I guess it, what he personifies is what people like there, because he's really talking about whacking the unions and keeping government spending down. Kind of interesting is a study by a couple of political scientists that contends that a vote for health care reform reduced election margins by an average of 6 to 8% for Democrat members of Congress in the last midterms. That margin likely cost the Democrats at least 13 House seats. Studies authored by a couple of guys who are political scientists at the University of Denver and at North Carolina State. Both men say there was a smaller but still statistically significant effect for supporting the TARP bailout. And if you talk to people in the Chet Edwards camp, that was the vote that they believe started the spiral for his campaign. If pressed and off the record at that time, you would have found those people willing to say that his vote for TARP did not sit well in the district, and that began the spiral as far as his race is concerned. Anyway, stimulus package vote had a mixed effect, while there was apparently no overall effect on the cap-and-trade vote. But the reason that the Democrats lost so many, that's what they're saying.
How many people do you think understood cap-and-trade?
Well, I don't know
the Republicans had to come back and call it cap-and-tax.
They did. And the thing is, cap-and-trade is a dangerously scary thing to look at. It is a European way of looking at the way that we use our energy, and quite honestly, for so many reasons, Europe is so different than the United States in the way that they travel, in the way they use mass transit, the kind of cars that they drive, the roads that they drive on, and to talk about doing the same thing in the United States is short-sighted at least and really dangerous at the most. It's just, it would radically change our way of life. One of the things I'm going to talk to Steve Ogden about today is time and again we're hearing, and he's going to propose the constitutional amendment to allow Texas to raise the gasoline tax, state gasoline tax, by a maximum of 5 cents. Now, I'm wondering, in the long haul, is that not like the pack of cigarette tax that they put on in the last session at $1 a pack? As we see, you know, he's proposed that months ago, and the president the other day is saying, I believe that the U.S. government automobile fleet will be in 15 years, 100% either hybrid or electric, which means that fossil fuels won't be used as much. And will they be forcing that onto drivers like us And if that's the case, less gas will be bought, so the gasoline tax, in fact, may not meet revenue projections 5 years down the road. Certainly won't meet them 15 years down the road. So the gas tax is an interesting thing to look at, but it's not going to make long-term revenue projections. So we'll see what he has to say about that today. And let's see. Quinnipiac poll, because they do other stuff besides the presidential races, say that now U.S. Americans, by a 67-29 margin, support allowing women to serve in ground units and to engage in close combat. 67-29. Of course, if you listen to Secretary Gates yesterday, we don't want to be doing close combat with anybody. He was I think, in front of the Senate yesterday, maybe the House. Anyway, he was testifying yesterday and said anybody who wants to put U.S. troops on the ground in another area now ought to have their head examined. He said it will not happen while he holds that post. So he was pretty pointed about it, as a matter of fact. He was
well, he's got nothing to lose. What are they going to do, fire him?
Yeah, right. And it all really had to do with the idea of the testimony, because the president has signed a document allowing the CIA to be on the ground, saying that they could be. And, you know,
they play by different rules than the guys wearing the digitized camouflage.
Yeah, they do. And one of the things that's interesting is in listening to the Fox people, they said, you know, if this is a covert operation, this has been the most widely publicized covert operation in history. Because not one, not two, not three, but four White House sources secretly confirmed that he had signed this document. So if you have, why is that? Because you couldn't believe the first three? So, I mean, if they had four people from the White House who were out there secretly leaking this, they obviously wanted people to know that.
Or you had four reporters that ran into each other and said, hey, you know what so-and-so told me?
Yeah.
Hey, well, so-and-so just told me the same thing.
Yeah. But I think what happened is this was in response to people saying that the president had waited, he had sat on the sidelines, he had not made any decisive moves, but they wanted to make sure everybody knew, because the election is sooner than you think, that he was decisive. That he had signed this document, that he is ready to put CIA covert operations to work in Libya for the best of the Libyan people and not put our boots on the ground.
Well, yeah, put this under your pillow and sleep on it. Campaign starts in about 6 months.
Yeah, well, or if you're in the White House right now.